powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
You guys notice it's dropped like 20 degrees in the last couple of weeks?
In this room?
No, outside.
Yeah, no, I feel like fall got here pretty quickly. I could see my breath this morning outside.
Yeah, that's definitely not good. I mean, when it's sunny out and you're out there, you're walking your dogs around, you can wear like flip-flops, short sleeves, you're fine. And then the next day, it's like, man, I got to wear my winter coat.
Oh, see, I don't have dogs, so I don't have to go outside.
Ever?
Except to go to work.
That's the only reason you go outside?
Yeah,
oh,
that's
my
it.
God. Well, I want to...
I also really like fall.
Why?
Because it's the best season. Fall?
Up in the Pacific Northwest?
Yes. Everything fall is amazing.
All right. I'm not going to get into this with
okay,
you.
Okay. We can talk about it later.
I have an air of superiority.
I'm not letting it go.
About fall, like in New England, and you not knowing anything about what fall is. Okay.
That's fair.
Oh, you think fall is better in New England?
I mean, spend 5 seconds there and you'll agree.
I think you're confused. I think you think winter.
Nope. I'm very sure.
You think currently, right now, October?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't even have to be convinced. It's a fact.
Yeah, I'm going to let you think what you think.
All right. Well, good.
How can you be so sure?
Sorry, man. I'm actually a little worried about the safety of this next guest we're about to have on here. Brady Henderson, ESPN.com. Brady, when you're out on your boat there and the wind really starts picking up, do you ever get worried that you're going to, like, capsize?
Never get worried that I'm going to capsize, but I have learned my lesson not to try to film a stand-up video on the top of my boat in mid-December when it's windy because... almost lost my tripod and camera into the Lake Union when that happened a couple years ago.
So. Did you fall
but
in?
No, as far as safety, no. I'm fine.
You're fine, okay. And ESPN probably wouldn't re-endorse you for that equipment, right?
I would. Well, they would probably say you're an idiot and you're going to have to pay for this yourself. And I would say, yeah, you're right.
Oh my God. Well, listen, I'm glad to hear that you're safe. Now, as far as the Seahawks are concerned, we've been talking a lot this week about how. You know, the Seahawks are 5-1. Does it really feel like it? They still feel like they're just littered with problems. What's the sense about this team? What's something that's different about them maybe from years past when you've covered the team?
I mean, the first thing that stands out is they're playing pretty well. I mean, they're 5-1. That's the best start since 2013, only the second time they've started 5-1 in franchise history. We all know what happened in 2013. And, you know, they're doing it without having gotten a ton of pass rush, which, you know, obviously all offseason that was a big concern, you know, without Frank Clark, and then especially when they found out that Jaron Reed was going to be gone for those first six games. Everybody felt better about that once they traded for Clowney after signing Ziggy Ansah. But they really have not gotten much pass rush, and you know, as important as that is in the NFL, it is a little surprising that they're 5-1, just given the state of their pass rush now. Obviously expect that to turn around eventually, especially now that Jaron Reed is coming back. But that's just one thing that stands out, just looking at those numbers this morning.
You know, I'm going to stick with that topic. How quickly do you expect that to improve? Do you expect it to be a big change when Reed comes back? Is there another player that could benefit from that?
Well, I would say I would sort of offer a bit of caution there, just knowing that, you know, having seen how long it took or how long it has taken, I should say, you know, Jadeveon Clowney and Ziggy Ansah to kind of find their footing. And that's not to say that those guys haven't made impact plays. Obviously, Ansah had the forced fumble and the recovery on Sunday. Jadeveon Clowney had the pick six a few weeks ago in Arizona. So those guys have played well. They just haven't got their, you know, pass rush going. And you would probably chalk that up to those guys really not having any sort of a normal offseason. Either of those guys, with Ansah coming off the injury, Clowney really not practicing until he got traded to the Seahawks right before the season opener. So the tie-in there to Reed is that, you know, maybe everybody was expecting too much too soon from guys that really didn't get a ton of work in. And so, you know, I think Pete Carroll kind of was speaking in those cautionary terms yesterday, saying that really not sure what they could expect from him right away. But certainly he expects, once Jaron Reed gets into midseason form, he expects him to help out the rest of those guys. He made the point that, you know, without Jaron Reed, they've had to rely on Puna Ford and Al Woods to rush the passer. And those guys are, that's really not their strength. Those guys are nose tackles who are better run defenders than pass rushers. But without Reed, they've sort of been forced into that role. So I think the Seahawks think, and it's easy to see why, that Jaron Reed is going to open some things up for other guys and eventually make that pass rush better.
Brady, so many people have been focusing, I feel like, on the negative aspects of this team when they're 5-1, and you just said They haven't done that since 2013. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be the next Super Bowl team for the Seahawks, but obviously this is a great start for them. What is one of the main reasons or reasons why Seahawks fans should be optimistic and hopeful and excited rather than focusing on the negative things that have been going on with this team?
Probably, the first thing that comes to mind is the way Russell Wilson is playing, and I don't need to tell you that, Jake. You know as well as anybody, but just for some context out there, six straight games with 100+ passer rating. I think I saw the stat that only three other quarterbacks have done that. He's really any relevant passing stat that you look at. He's off to the best start in his career. I'll give you another one. 14 touchdowns to zero interceptions. That's six off of Peyton Manning's record for most TDs to begin a season without an interception. And with the way that he's playing, I don't know if anybody has any reason to doubt that he could get that. And by the way, they're playing a Ravens team this week that, yes, it has Earl Thomas, but that secondary, for all the resources they've put into it, including Earl Thomas, has not been very good. And you just saw them trade for Marcus Peters. So with the way that Russell Wilson is playing, that's probably the number one reason for optimism.
Talking to Brady Henderson of ESPN.com on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Brady, do you think there's any possibility that Rashad Penny could get moved?
Boy, that is a good question. I don't think so, just because I think that, Penny, look, you can't pass judgment, definitive judgment on a guy this early. I think that Penny, his best value is going to be in basically 2 years from now. And I say that because, Chris Carson has, two and a half seasons left, or a season and a half left on his rookie contract, I should say. With the way that he runs and how much he's being used, I think he's averaged 28 touches over the past couple games. I would wonder about his long-term future with the Seahawks, just knowing that, are you going to pay a running back like Chris Carson, who runs as violent as he does, when you've already drafted a running back in the first round? So I would think that they're maybe taking a long-term approach with Penny. That's not to say that they didn't expect to get more out of him than what they've gotten so far, but that would be the one reason that I would probably say no, just because I think you're going to need him once Chris Carson's rookie contract runs out.
Back in late September, Pete Carroll was asked whether Ed Dixon was on track to return when he's eligible, and he said the race is on, and he was a bit concerned about it. Didn't say that he'd suffered a setback, but just say they didn't know yet. Does it sound like Dixon is a possibility to help replace that loss with Will Dissly?
Eventually, yes. And, for a team that just lost its starting tight end, you could do a lot worse than somebody like Ed Dixon, who they basically signed last year to be their starter. There's a bit of confusion on, or at least on my part, in terms of just his timetable, because when he first went down in the summer, the word from Pete Carroll was that it was going to be about 4 to 5 weeks, which, at the time it would have put him on track to maybe be, threatening to be back by the season opener. And all of a sudden that turned into, several months. So he is not eligible to come back until week 9, just based on the rules for guys who go on IR after cutdown day. So they're going to have to get by with, what they've got, or at least whatever else is available to them. You saw them sign Tyrone Swoops to their practice squad today. So until Dixon comes back in a few weeks, they're going to have to get by without him.
Brady, who is maybe the one player on this team that has stood out above expectations for this year? I think that there are a couple candidates, but in your mind, who's really been a nice surprise for the Seahawks this season?
I would probably say, the first guy that comes to mind is DeMarco Jones. Not a guy that a lot of people knew a ton about, just because, a fifth-round pick last year, missed his entire rookie season. And, he's played pretty well those first two games. And obviously, I'm sure you guys have had the conversation about, basically being plugged into right guard when he hasn't really played guard in his career, and also hasn't really played on the right side. And all of a sudden he gets thrown into the fire against Aaron Donald. I think he handled himself well, Sunday against Cleveland as well. So he's probably the one guy that comes to mind. And, before, I would say a couple of weeks ago, if you would have asked me what the likeliest position that they would trade for if they were to make a trade at the deadline, I probably would have said, just some O-line depth, especially with Ethan Posick, having the injury that eventually put him on IR. And that may still be true, but, in terms of needing some O-line depth there, but, maybe the urgency doesn't seem like it seem as big as it did before we saw what they've got in DeMarco Jones.
How long before Dwayne Brown comes back?
If not, so the word from Pete Carroll was that if not this week, then next week. So, you know, as optimistic as Carroll usually talks about injuries, for him to sort of give that, you know, looking ahead to maybe getting him back or looking ahead to you know, likely getting him back the next week, to me that tells me that, you know, it seems less than 50-50 that he's going to play this week. And, you know, that sort of puts them in a little bit of a bind at tight end, just because, you know, whereas you would have George Fant playing, you know, some of those extra tight end snaps, well, he's your starting left tackle now without Dwayne Brown. So you know, you're really your only true tight ends on the roster right now, as soon as Disley goes on IR, are Luke Wilson and Jacob Hollister, two guys that were not on your active roster. And in Luke Wilson's case, he was not on any roster to begin the season.
Brady, this is a huge game coming up versus the Baltimore Ravens for the Seahawks. This is a playoff type of matchup when you look at these two teams. What is the one, or I guess couple, aspects about the Ravens that give you concern for the Seahawks heading into this weekend?
Yeah, I will, full disclosure here, I have not watched a ton of Ravens football this season, but, you know, the thing that probably comes to mind first is you've got a playmaker in Lamar Jackson, and that can create a lot of problems. You know, look, he's not the passer that Russell Wilson is, but he is a playmaker, and he can cause a lot of problems. And, you know, you've seen some tackling issues with the Seahawks defense before. You've seen, especially earlier in the season, you know, some plays that got, you know, over the top on them that they would like to have back. So that's probably the one thing. But again, I have not watched enough Ravens football to really give you much of a detailed, you know, scouting report other than that, just that they've got a pretty dynamic quarterback and they've got a secondary that has some issues.
Brady Henderson of ESPN.com on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Thanks for joining us today, Brady. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brady.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Couple things from over the weekend, which we didn't really get to yesterday, because Monday is always going to be a big football day, right?
Yeah, all reaction.
Whether it's win or lose, we're going to talk Seahawks up and down. But I guess it was Saturday. Yeah, I was watching the Georgia-South Carolina game.
Me too.
You watched that game?
Yes.
I watched really from about mid-third quarter on.
No, I watched about from halftime on.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, I mean, both coaches seemed to bungle it, but we're not going to talk about that. I'm just watching this. I'm watching the way that overtime is conducted in college football, and you compare it to the way it is in the NFL. I wish we could, like, mishmash.
Like a hybrid.
Two of them. Yeah. Because you asked me the other day in the sports pit, you said, don't you think it's more fair if both teams get the ball?
Mm-hmm.
It is more fair. I think, actually, but let's consider this for a second. If you're in the NFL and you're the team that's playing defense first in overtime, doesn't that give you advantage? Doesn't that give you an advantage? Because what percentage of offensive possessions do teams score on? Is it more than 50%?
I don't know. I don't know the exact stats.
I also think it depends on your team. If your offense is your strength, I mean, I go back to that Kansas City-New England game.
Mm-hmm.
If your offense is your strength and your defense is a weakness, who knows if the Chiefs could have come out and scored and
But that's not the league's fault to fix your defense.
No, I know. But a change in those rules allowing both teams to have at least a possession would allow you to at least have a shot.
Certainly. Because,
but what if their offense?
Otherwise,
aren't equal?
It's just a
what if their offense aren't equal? Then what's the difference?
Well, to me, you look at this, and I would say that this is the college overtime is a lot more fun for me as I watch it. Both teams get opportunities. You limit it to maybe, you know, three overtimes, you know, two or three overtimes. And the nice thing about it is if you're the defense, the advantage, what you were asking is the advantage of the defense is knowing what you have to have. So if you give up a touchdown, that your offense knows that they need to get a touchdown. If they get a stop, they know that all they need is a field goal. So there is the advantage
for the defense.
But here's the thing,
Jake, for a team like South Carolina – to beat them basically in a home run derby, does that tell you anything about South Carolina? That's one of the biggest wins in the history of their program,
or
certainly
the
in the last 20 years. Right. So are they really a better team because they botched fewer plays at the end of a game and then won in a home run derby style offensive shootout? Why don't you at least – I'm talking for both leagues now. If you're going to give both teams a possession, okay. But can we at least start at like the 30, like our own 35 or 40 yard line, so that it actually looks like football rather than like, okay, we're going to run it, we're going to pass it, have a guy catch it out of bounds 15 yards. Now all of a sudden we're boom, 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 we're in the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that. However, when you talk about that, I think in overtime, when you're already in that situation, sometimes the best team or the more talented team doesn't win in those situations.
Yeah, so in that situation, obviously. But I'm trying to make it so we get a better more representative what's the word?
Well,
you're saying both teams should essentially have a shot at, with the goal being get a touchdown, like start at the 30, drive down the field.
Start at
your own 30 or your own 40, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. I don't care. But then at least make it look like, as you're trying to score, at least make it look like football. Like you have to put together an actual drive to get the ball in the end zone, not like a pass here or pass there and then you're in.
Well,
if the defense blows a coverage, even on a run.
Yeah, but scoring in the red zone isn't necessarily easy. It looks easy. It's from 20, 25 yards out, but it's still difficult. You have to put the ball in the end zone, and not everybody is capable of doing that. So whether you put it at the 40, whether you put it at the 25, to me there really is no difference in the overtime situation. You're just making it more difficult, I guess you could say, for each team. But the in essence, what you're getting is each team getting an opportunity. I like that. I think it leads to more excitement and more fun, where the NFL system right now is not fun.
Yeah, well, I disagree.
It's not entertaining.
I disagree with that. I think the NFL system is fun in its own way, but I'm not convinced today that South Carolina was a better team in that game. Forget about them being a better team at all. Georgia's better. But even in the context of just that game,
where the parity is there? So obviously Georgia is a better team than South Carolina, mm-hmm. even though South Carolina won.
Yeah.
But would you feel differently were you to see the Seahawks go against someone and another team wins the coin toss, gets a touchdown, and you knew that Russell Wilson never touched the field?
But I just said I wanted to touch the ball.
Okay, but you just want it to be, is it that you don't want it to be like a triple overtime option? You don't want, like, it's either a touchdown or nothing?
I want the overtime to look like it's a continuation of the game, not a completely different exhibition.
Different setup.
That's what it is. I mean, your start. Where do they start? The 40?
True. So you want a combination.
25.
You want a. What you really want is
they
you want a combination.
25.
Yes, the 25 yard line.
Yeah, you play four quarters and then you play a carnival game.
Yeah. So you want a combination of the NFL and college rules that both teams get an opportunity to score.
Yeah.
And that it starts at a regular situation.
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't think there's anything unreasonable about that.
I don't think it's. I don't think there's anything not reasonable about it. I personally love college overtime. I love the way it's set up. I love that there's parity. There's uniqueness to it. And each team, they both know it. So whether it's you got to execute in those situations, just like you talk about third downs, just like you talk about red zone. If both teams are worth their salt, then you score in the red zone with 25 yards out.
You want to hear, do you have this piece of sound from Greenberg, Kyle?
Oh boy.
Okay. Okay. This is one. Oh God. I hope my Jet fan friends are not listening to this, but that is one fan base I am glad I'm not part of. Mike Greenberg from Get Up and formerly of Mike and Mike, etc., saying this because Sam Darnold went out there and beat the Cowboys.
We have had some conversation on this show about whether or not Dak Prescott is one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL. Yesterday, he was definitively the second-best quarterback on that field. Oh. Sam Darnold is a better quarterback than Dak Prescott.
Stop it. Went healthy,
which yesterday was the first time that he was. If you watch that game yesterday, you tell me if you're starting a team, which quarterback is it you want? We have had...
Wait. Did he say Dak Prescott is considered a top-five quarterback?
No.
They've debated whether or not he is,
but they're saying now that Sam Darnold, because of one game, is a better quarterback than Dak Prescott?
And you didn't even give Sam Darnold spleen credit with that argument, which is really unfair.
I didn't, or he didn't.
He didn't.
He didn't even think to include that, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not fair to
Dak Prescott, look, I don't think he's a top five quarterback either, but neither is Sam Darnold, for God's sake. He's what, probably 11, 12, 13, 14th in the league?
Who, Sam Darnold?
Sam Darnold? What has he proven?
nothing up to this point. He's a promising rookie quarterback, just like we've had these conversations about Baker Mayfield and who else were we talking about the other day?
Daniel Jones.
He is a promising second-year player that's still growing. And this game that he came in, obviously the Jets have been horrendous without him. So you saw the immediate impact that Sam Darnold has in terms of uplifting his team. But this is complete overreaction by Mike Greenberg for sure. I don't think Dak is this great quarterback, but I don't think Sam Darnold has played more ball and shown more than Dak Prescott.
Sam Darnold, because he was the better quarterback for one day. What does that mean? That if Tom Brady loses to another quarterback, automatically that quarterback is better than him? Give me a break. Or that, like our other example with South Carolina and Georgia. Mm-hmm. South Carolina is not a better team just because they beat Georgia. They played a better game. Give me a break, Greenberg. Do we have time for this one more thing here, Ryan Clark? Do we have the audio of it or no?
I think it was just a tweet.
Oh, it was a tweet. Okay. Mm-hmm. He says that the 49ers will be just as good with Mason Rudolph as they are with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Do you want me to read the tweet?
Go.
Okay. He said, well, now I'm just looking for it. Okay, here it is. This was Ryan Clark. I am 100% convinced that the 49ers are a good football team. I'm also 100% convinced that they'd be just as good if Mason Rudolph was their quarterback, period. Maybe even better.
So the quarterback, not necessary in that situation.
For the way that the 49ers play right now, he's right. He's right. Jimmy Garoppolo right now has yet to show that he can take on that team and help win them football games. He hasn't had to at any point so far.
Eventually he will, though. That's the thing about being a great team. Eventually you need your quarterback to go out there and win a few games.
Correct.
Right? Whether Garoppolo can do that or not, I don't know. But I don't know that Mason Rudolph is necessarily the guy for that job either.
Well, when he played, during the time that he played, which was about a game and a half before Earl Thomas knocked him out, unfortunately, Mason Rudolph was playing really good football. He played good football against the Seahawks. When he came into the game, he played good football versus the Ravens. I mean, he's a promising young guy. If you're a Steelers fan in terms of the future, you got to be excited about what you saw from Mason Rudolph. But Jimmy Garoppolo, although a very handsome man.
Very symmetrical
face. And throws a beautiful football. I don't think he has been worth paying him as much money as the 49ers have paid him to this point.
I don't know either. What's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey, brought to you by Tito's Premium Vodka. So, folks, what's on tap?
Astros are at the Yankees, ALCS, Game 3. What's the score right now?
2-0, bottom of the third.
Mm-hmm.
Who's winning? Astros are up.
Astros are winning 2-0, bottom of the third.
Gerrit Cole on the mound for Houston.
They've been playing for I guess that makes sense. Hour and a half in, they're in the third inning. Playoff game, that makes sense.
Isn't it incredible?
Playoff game.
Yeah.
Isn't it incredible what the Astros have created? Just the absolute juggernaut that they are right now?
Yeah. What was their record against the Mariners this year? Was it 18-1? 18-1. You know, some Mariner fans were embarrassed at the idea that they may get no hit three times. Forget about getting no hit. 1-18 against the team in your division? That's beyond embarrassing. I'm not sure what the word for that even is.
Well, it is embarrassing. However, they are such polar opposites in where they were from the objectives of their years in terms of the Astros trying to win a World Series and the Mariners trying to be as bad as they possibly could.
No, they weren't.
I mean,
they were trying to win a few games, though, man. I mean, gee, 18-1, come on. All right, the other game, Cardinals at Nationals. I hope the Nationals just mop the floor with the Cardinals. Game 4 at 5. You can join 710 ESPN Seattle at 6 o'clock. We'll be taking that right after Bob, Dave, and Moore are done. That's NLCS Game 4. I hope that the Nationals win that game because a Game 5 to me is just a waste of time. Unless the Cardinals can find a way to win tonight and to win tomorrow, Game 5 can actually make it an interesting series, push it 6 games. I wish that they would just go away. Coming up next, our Seahawk fans.
You and Salk, it's what? Like this personal vendetta against the Cardinals.
It's not that. It could be any team, Stacey. But when you go down 3-0,
I know what you're saying.
I know what you're saying.
It just makes me laugh.
I want to be rid of you. It could be any team. It could be.
You're embarrassing yourself.
You are embarrassing yourself. And they know it. Believe me. Our Seahawks fans taking the 5-1 start for granted. We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Jake, I hate to say, I think I'm actually on the audience's side on this one.
Of what one?
You mean you agree?
Of what one? You came in this morning and you said that you were getting the impression that too many Seahawks were taking the 5-1 start for granted, and that they were pointing more to the negative than they were to the positive.
Yeah.
Am I right so far?
Yes.
I can't really say that I blame them.
Yeah.
And I don't actually, like, in my last 5 years doing this on the radio with Bob and Graz, I found myself a couple of times in a spot where I felt like I was telling our audience what they should think and what they should feel, and I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it. So if they feel that way, I am more than okay with it.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to.
What is your goal here?
Give some wisdom and just say, look, 5-1 is a heck of a start. Is an absolute heck of a start. Has only been done for the Seahawks in 2013, which helps set them up to get home field advantage and make a Super Bowl run. Am I saying that they're as deep and as talented as that 2013 team? No. But every win matters. Every win counts for this team, especially when you're in an arms race versus the 49ers. That is very clear at this point. I also look at this 5-1 team and I say, yes, they're not winning sexy. They are not blowing teams out. They are not instilling the fear across the NFL. But you know what they are doing? They're earning respect by going 3-0 on the road, by winning tough games, by showing that they do have the NFL's best quarterback in Russell Wilson right now. Chris Carson is running like a madman in these last 3 weeks. So I think that you look at this team, you look at this team in the narrative.
What, did someone just shatter a glass?
No, my mic came off.
He yanked the thing right out of the...
I didn't yank it. I was just trying to change it a little bit. But
dude, you yanked it.
You look at this.
Got that cannon for an arm, man.
It does.
You look
take
at this.
Take it easy in here.
And I would just say that as you're going through this, this team is a very good football team that has shown that it's one of the best in the NFC, and it hasn't been pretty. There's a lot of complaints about what it looks like, but this is a very good football team.
Yeah, no, and it's not that I don't think it's a good football team. Obviously, you have to be a good enough football team to put together 5 wins, right? And Russell Wilson, like we've talked about before, playing unbelievable football right now. When I look back at the 2013 schedule, and I know that you've kind of said this, but when I look back at that 2013 schedule, I mean, none of the wins, the initial ones, with the exception of the win in overtime over the Houston Texans, were close. 45-17 over the Jags, 29-3 over the 49ers, 12-7 over the Panthers. You're always close with those guys. I think that what fans are worried about is that this team could just as easily be 3-3.
That's exactly right. There's going to be a great quarterback that comes along at some point and just lights them up.
There hasn't
that's
been
the,
to
that's
this
the biggest
point.
Fear.
It is
who,
a big fear.
Okay, hold on. Let's go through it. Andy Dalton, Mason Rudolph, a combination of Mason Rudolph and Ben Roethlisberger,
right.
Who was the next guy?
That would have been Teddy Bridgewater with the Saints.
And then Teddy
Jared Goff. Kyler Murray, Jared Goff.
Kyler Murray in his first year. Jared Goff, while the Rams are not sexy, and then Baker Mayfield coming off the worst day
of
his career.
But Baker Mayfield played well, I think.
He played okay.
Yeah.
He threw three interceptions, and again,
he didn't play like an elite quarterback,
true,
though. I mean, come on.
You can poke holes wherever you want to, but you can also look at the positive.
The holes are already there. I'm just looking at them. I'm not poking them.
You can look at whether this team is worse than what they really are. And that's my point, is I think there's a lot of people out there that are saying that
that's
this 5-1
yeah.
Seahawks team is not for real.
Right.
I guess that's what I'm getting at. And this is a great opportunity versus the Baltimore Ravens, where this is a legitimate playoff type of team.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be able to have a good benchmark here. But I look at this team and the way that they're winning football games, and I say that this is not just some fluke. They didn't just win, you know, oh, they could easily be 3-3. They could have easily lost a bunch of these games. Yes, but they haven't, because they've got great leadership.
Right.
They've got a great head coach. And, guys, they traditionally play this way. This isn't new to Seahawk football.
Right. No, I'm just saying what I think that folks are thinking. I think the way I look at it is this team is much better than I thought they would be. And have surprised me and
just looking at them on the field.
Just
looking
at them
on the
field. Forget
about their record. Yeah. They just look better to you.
Yes. And but I think that it feels, I think a lot of fans are feeling like they're waiting for the other foot to drop.
Shoe.
Totally. That's what I said.
Yeah.
hopefully the other foot's not dropping.
Yeah. Gosh, other shoe.
You got a serious gangrene problem going on.
Is that what drop foot is? Gangrene?
I don't know.
That is a condition, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Hopefully not for the Seahawks or not for any of us.
Drop foot. Hey, how's your microphone doing?
It's doing a lot better.
I'm really proud of you.
I guess in that conversation just got me so fired up that I took the mic right off the desk.
I know.
So.
I want to say, like,
shout out to Kyle for
anyone that
out.
Can't see. Like, the mic was being fixed while Jake was continuing making his point, which is very distracting. I would have fallen off there.
That's radio professionalism.
Yeah, that is what they're your shining star. No, but I mean, it's an interesting point, and I'm not knocking Seattle's wins. Again, I mean, it's like you've said, the difference between a good and bad team is that a good team finds a way to win, and Seattle's managed to do that.
Right. I don't think anybody's knocking the wins. It's more of, do you think this team is legit or not?
Well, I think it's also that, like Kyle said earlier, the same way that the Yankees and their fans might be kind of spoiled. It's not that Seahawks fans are spoiled, but I think the Seahawks are used to seeing a team that is comfortably in the top third, at least, of the NFC.
You know,
In defense. Right? In defense. We're used to a certain style from the Seahawks, and we are not seeing that style right now.
Okay, but you have... Okay, if that's the case then, Jake, you can understand why the fans, some of them, are skeptical.
Sure.
Because they're winning in a way that they're not used to seeing.
Sure.
Unfamiliarity is going to cause anxiety in anybody, all right? I mean, Stacey, you asked something interesting in the break. You said
Tom.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You did something good. you were curious as to whether or not if you covered another team, how would that fan base behave?
Yeah.
Would it be similar? Would it be different? Would it depend on how recently that team's had success, et cetera, et cetera? I think you would find that it would be pretty much the same.
Yeah.
In New England right now, even though they're also undefeated, they're complaining up and down. I mean, look, they think that their team should beat the you-know-what out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they poke holes in their own team. They look at the deficiencies every single week, just like we do. So it's basically the same. I mean, that's the game. That's part of being an NFL fan, is looking at your team and... What jumps out? What causes you the most anxiety, right? That's what you're going to take from the game. You're not going to say, oh, at the end of the game, we won, and all that stuff I was feeling, you know, meant nothing. No, it meant something.
Yes.
It absolutely did.
And I'm not sitting here saying, no, you should not be worried about their pass rush, and you think that this defense should be great. I'm not saying that at all. I'm right there with you. When they were down 20-6, I was a little bit freaking out.
Yeah.
I was not happy with what I was seeing. However, what I am saying is that this group is playing differently. They're winning in a different way than what we are accustomed to. And this is a group that, although they are, I guess, giving you anxiety about their deficiencies, there are also some really, really positive things going on. And the reason why they're 5-1.
If all that fixed itself was the pass rush, do you think fans would feel entirely differently?
Yes, I do.
Because if you're a team where... If you can fix one problem and then people feel like you could be a Super Bowl contender, then you're a pretty good
team.
You
know what this team lacks? This team lacks a viciousness. They lack a viciousness that the 2013 team had. Because you knew that guys like Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill could be coming after you. And you knew that if you threw the ball in Richard Sherman's direction, you were going to be in trouble. And they were going to tell you about it after the game. That is a viciousness that this team doesn't have, that the fan base in 2013 really bought into.
Mm-hmm.
Buying into a method where you know you're going to screw it up for an entire quarter and then creep your way back in and then find a way to eke it out at the end of the game, that's fine, but it's also a really difficult thing to handle. All right, you and Kyle, Stacey, unearthed this really, 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 really weird story coming out of the Netherlands. We have to talk about this next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back!
All right, we were going to talk about this story coming out of the Netherlands, but I put the kibosh on it. Sorry.
That's fine. Kyle and I have talked about it enough today.
Yeah, if you want...
Just search Dutch family.
Yeah, Google Dutch Family Pub.
Sure.
Dutch Basement. Family Pub. And you can get the full story on this weirdness that's occurring.
It's too disturbing for Tom and Jake. So we're going to move on.
That's fine.
It's also completely unimportant.
Yeah, yes. It doesn't matter.
That's the other thing. It has nothing to do with sports.
But what is important that we haven't even really addressed yet, and well, I'm sure we'll talk about it maybe more tomorrow. There's a guy who's going to be up in the Ring of Honor at some point. He's going to be returning on Sunday in a Raven jersey by the name of Earl Thomas.
The one and only Earl Thomas.
Cheer or boo?
Who?
Wait, that should be a game. We should do a game show maybe tomorrow.
Cheer or boo?
Cheer or boo. We'll come up with like a bunch of different maybe topics that could go either way.
I'll think on this.
Because Earl Thomas, I mean, I want maybe I'll put out a poll tonight. What percentage of people do you think would boo Earl Thomas?
That's a great question. I would have said before he gave Pete Carroll the bird, I would have said that there would be a significant amount of people that would cheer for Earl Thomas when he came back into town. After that situation, after he got hurt versus the Cardinals and, you know, flipping Pete Carroll off, I think that that would significantly change. And not only doing that, but his comments here in the offseason about that situation is interesting as well.
I gave Pete, you know, the middle finger. Because I feel like he wasn't being honest with me.
What was going through your mind when they were carting you off the field and you were hurt?
Yeah, I was basically talking to Pete. Because I knew what happened, because I've been through it before. I knew it was broke. Like, when Pete came trying to, like, act like he, you know, concerned, I was like, you won, bro. Like, you know, just kept it moving.
So at the time that you gave him the dirty bird, he said nothing?
No, we haven't spoken.
The dirty bird.
He doesn't believe that Pete cared about his injury?
No, I think he was speaking from a place of frustration as knowing that Pete is a part of those negotiations and maybe has a bit more power in personnel decisions than would the average head coach, and feeling a little bit of I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Feeling a little bit of betrayal for that. And then knowing that Pete coming over and being concerned as a head coach was one thing, but and on the same length, like, he also ended up winning.
Earl Thomas sees this situation as very clear-cut and very emotional in that moment, that this was a war and a battle between financial stability for him and his family, and that the Seahawks organization was counting on Earl Thomas to either, one, not play to the same productivity, or to get injured to lessen his value. And in that moment, he felt that Pete Carroll is absolutely a part of those conversations. Pete, in his mind, when you talk to Pete Carroll, he doesn't view himself as GM. He tries to leave that role to John Schneider. He has a ton of input in that, but tries to leave it to Matt Thomas and John Schneider. He wants to think as head coach Pete Carroll as much as possible. Mm-hmm. However, Earl knows that system, also understands the role that he plays, and very much viewed Pete, along with John, along with Matt Thomas, as that group collectively. And so in that moment, as an emotional state, an emotional moment, saying that, Pete, you don't care about me. You care that you won this negotiation, and now you don't have to pay me. That's how he viewed it in his
mind.
But
he's done – the thing is, Pete Carroll has done this with, like, hundreds of other players. It's not just about Earl Thomas. Like, Earl's got to understand – and I'm sure on some level he does, how the NFL works. It's not that Pete Carroll doesn't care. He cares.
I'm sure he understands that, but I don't think Pete Carroll doesn't care either. I think Pete Carroll cares deeply about his players, but I think the tricky line you walk as a player's coach is that to get someone to buy into your system, you truly have to make them feel that you believe in them, and that, and with that comes this kind of, there's a vulnerability in believing that your coach can be loyal to you.
So you're saying Pete, because of the way he runs his team and the way he treats his players.
I think you risk sometimes those relationships ending in a fractured way versus it's just a business. I know what this
because is. Because he doesn't set that mark like Belichick does from the beginning.
Right, that there is a personal investment there, that in order to buy into your system, I have to think that you care about me and I have to care about you.
But at the end of the day, we're not giving you a third contract. Bye-bye.
Yes, yeah. And he is viewing that as fake and phony. And again, that is what Earl Thomas felt and obviously continues to feel at this moment in time. Maybe he'll think back later and see the situation for what it really was, but that's what he was thinking in that moment. And so that's where I come back when you say, are people going to boo or cheer? That's where it's muddied to me. I don't know what people's normal reaction would be. I like to think of Earl Thomas, the player from before that moment and what he's done, but I can definitely understand why people would take the other view, and especially when it's Sunday, right? This Sunday, Earl Thomas is a part of the opponent. He is not a part of the Seahawks.
It's interesting. It's interesting too to look at, like Stacey, you just outlined. I think you did a great job. The relationship between the player and the coach, but also we have this really brash, outspoken team. The relationship between the player and the fans. Because they are so, like, take Richard Sherman, for example. It's like, we want to think that he was fighting on our behalf at one point. And then he turns, it's like, oh, no, he was fighting on his behalf the whole time. Like, we're Earl Thomas in this
situation.
There's
that weird sense of betrayal
right,
there.
And we get mad. You know, it's like, wait a minute, Earl, you're flipping off us. Pete Carroll is us. He's our coach. Like, you can't flip him off. Otherwise, we're going to be mad.
Well, yeah, there's just so much of this, like, self-identification with a team.
Yes.
With sports in particular that makes so much of this tricky. I wouldn't boo Earl Thomas. I hope people don't, but it's tricky.
Cheer or boo? We have to do that tomorrow at some point. Cheer or boo?
I got to figure it out.
And nothing, like, super controversial, like LeBron or anything.
Yeah, we also have to play catch with Jake. Don't forget that.
When are we doing
all
that?
All right, I have a football in my car usually, but I will make sure that there is one, okay?
One regulation size football.
Always regulation size.
Not one of those little, like, 49er
replicas. Yeah, don't take it easy on us.
Okay, do you want a high school football? Do you want an
NFL? I want
football?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I'll bring
we're
it adults.
In. I want one with the laces worn down.
Okay, NFL football.
Game played football.
Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.